Well, good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau, and it's Pat Moore. I'm your host for Juneau Afternoon today, and my guests include Robin Gilchrist, who will be giving us a scoop on some Saturday sessions coming up at UAS. The Divas will be here. They're performing tomorrow night at Zephyr, so we'll talk to a few of them and find out what they'll be doing. We'll find out about the kickoff party for the upcoming Relay for Life coming up. We'll have Writer's Almanac, Music and More, and Master Gardener David Darren Snyder will drop in and give us some information on classes coming up. Weather mostly cloudy, scattered showers, snow showers, highs around 30, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tonight, cloudy, scattered snow showers, lows around 26, and southeast winds 10 miles per hour.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the National Congress of American Indians outlines tribal priorities for the year. Matt Laszlo reports on Thursday's State of the Indian Nations address.
This week, President Obama only reported that the U.S. is getting stronger. But Jefferson Keel, president of the Congress of American Indians, has a more upbeat assessment of Indian country.
The State of Indian Nations is strong. Our nations are strong. Our people are strong.
Tribal leaders believe they're making headway in Washington. They have a supportive administration in the White House and many allies on Capitol Hill who are fighting to protect tribal budgets in a time of austerity. Ernie Stevens is chairman of the Indian Gaming Association. He says tribes have also made headway with reclaiming some autonomy in recent years, but he says tribal leaders now need to be on guard against complacency.
I believe we cannot take one thing for granted, cannot take one step backwards or sideways. We've got to keep moving forward.
Eddie Tolis is with Alabama's Porch Band of Creek Indians. He says in recent years, the federal government and tribal governments have done a great job directing money to improve education and health care in Indian country. But he says now tribes need to focus on seniors.
But we've got a lot of elder people out there now. There's a lot of elder abuse going on in Indian country. There's a lot of elders being almost ignored out there, and we shouldn't do that. We've got to remember where we came from.
Going into this new year, President Keel also says a major priority for Native leaders is making an imprint on national elections, and he has a message for politicians who aren't listening to leaders in Indian country.
And in recent years, many have come to learn that the door swings both ways. Indian country can have a significant impact on elections, and it can be game-changing.
Keel also says the two top legislative priorities for Indian country are updating a law that protects Native women from abuse, and the other priority is legislation in response to the Supreme Court's Carcieri decision, which put in doubt what lands in Indian country can be put into trust by the Secretary of the Interior. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
The White House hosts office hours on Twitter for the Native American community. Senior Policy Advisor for Native American Affairs, Kimberly Teehee, and Associate Director for Intergovernmental Affairs, Charlie Galbraith, took questions on the social networking site. The online chat took place for about 50 minutes Thursday afternoon. In an email to the Native American community, Galbraith described the question and answer session as a more in-depth discussion about issues addressed during the State of the Union and how they affect the Native American community. One question answered on the White House live Twitter page during the session was the White House view of the Bureau of Indian Affairs law enforcement on tribal reservations and how can the president improve its effectiveness. The White House representatives answered by pointing to the Tribal Law and Order Act, signed into law last year to improve public safety on tribal lands and federal departments working to implement the law, like addressing crimes against Native women. Other questions asked and answered included issues on the Native 8A program, tribal colleges, Native small businesses, and Native language. Community questions submitted and not addressed during the online chat included tribal ID cards, federal recognition, and poverty. National Native News submitted several questions. One was answered about help for Native veterans. The administration pointed to work being done by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Questions National Native News submitted to the live feed that were not addressed by the representatives included tribal consultation on immigration and border issues, tribes and the Keystone Pipeline Project, and the White House response to the use of Geronimo's name in the Osama bin Laden operation. During this month in 1830, famed orator and Seneca chief Red Jacket died. Red Jacket took his name after a highly favored embroidered coat given to him by the British. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
So it's 6 minutes after three, Pat Moore, host for Juneau Afternoon today. Let's look at that weather forecast again. It's mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers for tonight, for the rest of today. Highs around 30, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Lovely skiing weather. Tonight, cloudy, scattered snow showers, lows around 26, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. And it looks like the weekend is going to continue those same conditions. So time to pull out the cross countries and take a look at the back loop road or something like that. Saturday be mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers, highs around 33, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday night, more snow. Sunday, rain and snow start to mix with each other, so the time to go skiing, if you're going to do it down here in the flats, is probably Saturday. My first guest is Robin Gilchrist from the University of Alaska Southeast, and there's a new program that you're part of that UAS is offering, right?
That's right. Thanks for having me on, Pat. Well, I would like to let you know that February is Career and Technical Education Month, and because of that, we want to highlight some of our programs that we do at the downtown branch campus, if you will. So Career and Technical Education is housed at the Tech Center, and we also have the Bill Ray Center. Those are our two main buildings. And our Saturday sessions that we're promoting in February are going to be each Saturday in February. So we'll mainly be using the Tech Center. And if folks don't know where that is, which most people in Juneau don't, unfortunately, it's across the street from the high school. It's the gray building that you'll notice as you're going out the road on your left there, right at the bridge comes over from the high school and drops right into our parking lot. So our first session at the Tech Center is February 4th, and it's going to be from 2 to 4 p.m., it's presented by Chuck Craig. He is a fabulous diesel instructor. And his session will be on getting your marine cooling system ready for spring. And on February 11th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Tech, Tony Martin will be presenting, and his topic is pickup diesel maintenance. February 18th, Elizabeth Williams will be presenting careers in Alaska healthcare industry. And I want to mention that our health science faculty and classes are at the Bill Ray Center, which is on 9th Street. So the easiest thing to do is to park on the side of the building that's by the Tesoro parking lot and come into the building on that side, and she'll be in room 110. And that is going to be from 10 to noon on February 18th. On that same Saturday over at the Tech, we're going to have Pete Traxler, who's going to be doing a session on changing your door threshold. And on the last Saturday of February, I'll be presenting. I'm Robin Gilchrist, and I'll be doing getting a building permit. And that's for contractors and homeowners. And so each of these sessions are free to the public. And we're going to have our doors wide open. We're going to have some food and beverage. And we just hope that people come down and get a chance to see our buildings and find out what we do and talk about careers and technical education.
So, Robin, how does the this is a separate school, or it's part of a structure at the University of Alaska Southeast. They have the usual schools of arts and sciences and the other aspects, and then this school is separate and deals with what you call career and technical education. What's the scope of that? In other words, what kinds of disciplines do you give degrees in?
We have the health science program. We have automotive, we have a diesel program, we have construction technology, and one of the newest things that we've been doing is we have a mine training center. And so each of those programs has within it different types of degrees that a student can receive. So we have occupational endorsements, which is our shortest degree program, and that can be anywhere from 9 weeks to a year. We have certificates, which are generally a year-long courses.
Two semesters.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we have associate's degrees. So in health sciences,
and those
for instance,
are usually a two-year degree, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we have a two-year health science degree, for instance. Construction technology has a two-year degree. And then within the diesel program, or I should say power technology, that's both automotive and diesel, there are also associate's degrees. So those are the two-year degrees. And all of our courses are basically skill-building courses that help people get into the workforce. And so they differ a little bit from the traditional liberal arts in that we have general education requirements, so there's still math and English and communication, but then there are specific classes that are skill building.
And the majority of these are kinds of hands-on things. So you have, mm-hmm. within the school, you have a lot of facilities. Like I think that automotive shop over there has like three racks and a whole bunch of tools and practically everything that an aspiring mechanic would ever encounter in the real world.
Absolutely.
So yeah. The idea is to provide a place where you can learn with hands-on experience as well as the requirements for the general education stuff, like, as you say, English. And
right,
that.
And I think that's one of the things that's very appealing to a lot of our students, if they have found that that's the kind of thing that really they're interested in doing, things that they can put their hands on, they can use tools, and what they're doing leads directly to a workforce credential, and then we have great connections with industry too. So the idea is that they're going to be placed into a really good job as soon as they complete one of the programs.
I think many of your associate's degrees, at least, have a component where the student is actually working in the field.
Some of them do.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So there are, what do they call that?
Internships.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of the word.
Yeah.
So a lot of your programs will involve, or some of your programs will involve, finding an actual working position.
Yes.
In a company here in town.
Yes.
In the field.
Yeah. A good example of that is the diesel marine oiler program, where students work with Chuck Craig, our diesel faculty, and then they have an internship right on the ferry. So they're learning what it is to work on a diesel engine, but also they're out there at sea with the Alaska Marine Highway System. So we've built up some really incredible partnerships.
Robin, you're doing this one workshop, the fourth workshop in the sequence on, was it four or five? Anyway, whenever, the last
right.
workshop, which is about getting a building permit.
Mm-hmm.
What's your relationship with the School of Career and Technical Education?
Well, I'm the associate dean, but I'm also an assistant professor in construction technology. So I teach the architectural design aspects of it and also computer-aided drafting. And then my background before going into teaching was as a residential designer. And so I've worked with the building department substantially and feel that that's one of the things that people get hung up on is, how do I get a permit? So hopefully I can demystify and make it a simple process to follow.
So now Chuck is going to do a thing on basically servicing the cooling system on your diesel engine on your boat.
Yes.
And is that do you know what he's going to what that's special? Well, let me first ask, who is he expecting to show up for the class?
Well, I think he is hoping that people from the community who have inboard marine diesel engines will come down and get a chance to talk about the questions that they have. He has coolant and additives, water pumps, heat exchangers, expansion tanks, and zincs covered in the topics. So we're hoping just the general public will come down.
So it's really designed for boat owners. It's kind of the, that's really the person that he's kind of targeting here. Is
absolutely.
How to learn how to take care of your own boat engine instead of paying somebody else for maybe routine maintenance and that sort of thing. And then the session that Tony is doing is about maintaining your diesel pickup engine.
Yeah, and he has listed the Dodge Cummins, the Duramax, and the Powerstroke diesel engines.
So these are new diesel engines. There's the technology for pickup diesels has really become very complex. It's and like for instance, some of the fuel pressures underneath there are such that you can actually have some danger if you're trying to do your own maintenance, so you really need to kind of know a little bit about what you're doing.
Right.
And because there's literally thousands of pounds of fuel pressure on the lines, as opposed to the old 32 pounds we used to have coming out of a gas line or something like that. So,
and I think all of the instructors who are going to be walking you through these hands-on classes are going to stress safety as well, because as you just mentioned, some of these systems can be a little dangerous unless you know what you're doing.
It seems like having a session on how to change out the piece that goes underneath the bottom of your door is a little light, but that's really a huge heat loss area, I think, in general, isn't it?
Yeah, and when we were talking to various people in the community about this, we had a lot of folks saying, that's great, because I'm, you know, especially now that it's so cold, you're sitting in your living room and you can feel air coming through the door. And the threshold is the one part of the door that's going to wear out quickly. And it's not really easy to change those over and get it right. And you can definitely save a lot of energy by replacing them. And there's so many different ones that the instructor's going to have. He said he's probably going to have at least six different types of thresholds. So hopefully, if you're having a problem with your threshold, he'll have an example to show you.
So one of the real advantages, I think, for the people who take this, who do these Saturday sessions, is exactly that, the chance to be able to see different levels of product and things like that that they might want to incorporate into their diesel engine, things they might want to do to their pickup, and so forth. So it's really kind of a public service. Is there a charge for these sessions?
No, they're free.
What are the times? What are the timelines again? We're doing the first one is
February 4th from 2 to 4 p.m.
Okay.
And then the 11th from 2 to 4 p.m. And then our career in Alaska healthcare industry, that one's going to start at 10 in the morning. So that's February 18th, and that's at the Bill Ray Center. February 18th at 2 o'clock at the Tech will be changing your threshold. And then on the 25th from 2 to 4 at the Tech will be me presenting getting a building permit.
Now, assuming that somebody didn't have a pencil and paper when you said all of that, is there a way they can catch up on the dates and times for these classes on a website or something like that?
Yes, you can go to UAS online and /careered, and we have our own website, and we're going to post these. This should also show up in our town, so if you're a newspaper reader, you should be able to find these listed in the newspaper's calendar.
Well, Robin Gilchrist, Associate Dean, did you say, of the School of Career Education, Career and Technical Education at the University of Alaska Southeast. This series of Saturday sessions starts one more time. The first session is
February 4th.
February 4th, and it's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
So come on out and find out from Chuck what you ought to do to change out the coolant in your own boat.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pat, for coming down and sharing this with us.
Yeah. Look forward to seeing people.
Yeah.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, born in Salzburg, Austria, 1756, who only lived for 35 years. But he started early, child prodigy from a family of musicians, toured all over Europe, wrote his first opera at the age of 11. He died at the age of 35 in mysterious circumstances. There's a popular image of him dying poor, miserable, working on a funeral requiem as he died. But overall, his final year was a productive one. He was living in Vienna. He was still getting commissions. He didn't have a lot of money that year, but then again, he rarely did. He and his wife, Constanze, never seemed able to live on what Mozart made. It was a busy year. In the first months of 1791, he wrote dance music for the winter balls at the court. He wrote the Piano Concerto No. 27. In the summer, a messenger came asking Mozart to write a requiem for his patron, Count Franz von Walsig, who had lost his wife, wanted to commission a requiem in her honor. Mozart was working on the opera La Clemenza di Tito to celebrate the coronation of Emperor Leopold as King of Bohemia, which premiered in early September. And 3 weeks later, his opera The Magic Flute opened in Vienna, which was a big hit. In October, he wrote the Clarinet Concerto in A, then a cantata for the Freemason Lodge, which he directed himself, November the 18th. Finally, he put all his energy toward the Requiem, but just after the performance of the cantata, he became extremely ill. He had a fever, his whole body was swollen. He continued writing the Requiem right up until he died, which was only 2 weeks after he became sick. And he died on December the 5th, 1791, was buried in a mass unmarked grave, which was a common practice for the middle class of Vienna. Nobody knows what his illness was. There are many theories about it: rheumatic fever, tuberculosis, syphilis, congestive heart failure, kidney disease, poisoning. But today's his birthday, 1756. Mozart, who said music in even the most terrible situations must never offend the ear, but always remain a source of pleasure. And it's the birthday of Lewis Carroll, born in Daresbury, England, 1832, Charles Lutwidge Dodgson, gifted at math, taught at Oxford, wrote poems and short stories, took photographs, and then one day in 1856, he took three little girls, Ina, Edith, and Alice, on a boating trip down the river and told them the story that became Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And a few years later, its sequel, Through the Looking Glass, and What Alice Found There. Lewis Carroll, whom Mark Twain called the stillest and shyest full-grown man I have ever met. Here's a poem for today by Kay Ryan, entitled Don't Look Back. This is not a problem for the necklace. Fish cannot recklessly swivel their heads to check on their fry. No one expects this. They are torpedoes of disinterest, compact capsules that rely on the odds for survival, unfollowed by the exact and modest number of goslings the S-necked goose is, who, if she looks back, acknowledges losses, and if she does not, also loses. Don't Look Back by Kay Ryan. From Say Uncle, published by Grove Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's 24 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO FM. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Pat Moore, your host. I have three guests in the studio with me who are going to tell us about a program that's coming up at the Zephyr. Is this tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, okay. So with me are Tom Loker, Carrie Griffin, and Bobby Mitchell. And the show is about divas, right?
Jazz divas.
Jazz
that's right,
divas.
Pat. And thanks for having me.
It's a jazz diva.
Jazz diva is a particularly female singer who sings jazz songs from American Songbook, yes.
Okay, yeah. So what are you going to do?
What songs are we going to do?
No, tell us about the show. What happens?
Oh, this is our ninth show.
Yeah, for those of us who didn't go to any of the first eight. So.
It's our ninth show. It's our fifth time at the Zephyr Restaurant. We're very pleased to be back there. We have 7 great singers lined up for tomorrow. I'll be playing piano and accompanying all of them, and then Clay Good will join us on the drums. And the singers, in order, are our MC and host, Eve Dillingham, who's a returning favorite at Jazz Divas, and Alyssa Fisher, who used to be a junior diva, and now she's all grown up and singing about 5 numbers this show. 2 new singers, Bobby Mitchell, who's here in the studio with us.
Hello.
Hi, Bobby.
And Christina Pollock, local singer, who's performing for the first time in Jazz Divas, but she's sung many times around Juno. Beatrice Cajel, who is our international chanteuse. She sings in French, and she's also going to do a piece in Portuguese tomorrow. Kari Groven, who's here with us in the studio, and she's a returning favorite at Jazz Divas. I believe this will be her 8th time, and we're very pleased to have her with us, too. Alaska's Kit, who's only 16, but just a powerhouse, great singer. And also, seems like I'm forgetting one person. No, that's everyone. Yes.
Did you get up to 9?
Eve, Alyssa, Beatrice, Christina, Bobby, Kit, Kari, of course. So we look forward to the show. It begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow, and I recommend or advise reservations for people who don't have them already. 780-2221 is the telephone number to call.
For the Zephyr?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And normally people come for dinner and be entertained while this is...
Dinner, appetizers, wine, dessert and coffee, all of those things.
Okay.
Any or all of those things.
All of the menu is open. So, Bobby...
I would just say that the reservations are closed up until 8 o'clock. Between 7 and 8, you can't get in for reservations anymore.
Ah, so they've already gone that far. So, Bobby, what kind of stuff do you sing?
I love to sing jazz, but I've sung every kind of music in my life. Being over 60, I like to call myself a singer of all genre.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But jazz is the first love.
I would say so right now, yes.
So what characterizes then, he tells me this is that a diva is someone who sings jazz, but what characterizes the diva approach to jazz? Is there one? Is there a single way
someone
of doing
things? Someone who is fairly accomplished at what they're doing, I would say.
Okay.
Or progressed in their art, yeah.
Okay. How do you progress in the art?
Practice. What?
Practice. practice.
Okay. But the question is, so someone who is new to this is going to do some stuff. What is it that you learn to do, or what is it that you acquire that polishes your performance?
You acquire an ear for what you're doing. You acquire a stylization.
So you start making the song yours rather than
just
the notes on the page. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Kari, do you sing? You've heard her sing, right?
Bobby. I haven't yet,
but
I hear great stuff about her singing.
Okay.
Yes, everybody who's heard her sing is just raving about her.
I was going to ask you how your singing is different, but let's make that a generic question.
Tom would know that probably.
Every singer in the show is different.
Okay.
And at the beginning, we've always tried to invite singers to Jazz Divas who complement one another and are not the same. So each singer performing tomorrow is different. Everyone brings their different experience, their own stylistic expertise, and everyone has a different way of interpreting these songs. But there are some things about jazz singing that, signature things about jazz singing that set it apart from other kinds of singing, that it's somewhat informal and improvisational. The singers have the ability to make the songs their own because there are places in each song where they can use some of those artistic or stylistic elements to make each note and song and each lyric sung their own. So
when you're playing accompaniment for a singer and they're making the song their own, so there's got to be a challenge for you. I'm reminded of someone, I can't remember, who was describing a jazz singer, and he said of her that she has a tendency to come at a note from a long ways off.
Shirley Horn. Yeah.
and I understood what he was saying, was that somehow he had to to find a way, because she was not going to be in the key signature that even that he was likely to be in with a piano or something like mm-hmm. that. And he had to figure a way to make that come together.
With practice and experience, you learn to navigate those things, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So do you change a chord or something? I mean,
sometimes you might need to, but it's very important for the accompanist to be the anchor and hold the singer from drifting too far.
Kari, have you worked with him?
I have worked with Tom now quite a bit over the last couple of years.
Do you sense him as the anchor?
I do sense him as a very solid anchor, yeah. And I would like to be an anchor myself as well, you
uh-huh.
know, because sometimes it happens that the singer knows where she is in the song, and the accompanists are wondering what is going on,
mm-hmm.
and then so the singer is the one that kind of gets it together again in one way or another. But that said, like. That very seldomly happens with Tom. and I know that I can always, if I get out on the limb, we can connect again and everything will be fine.
Especially with his left hand.
Yes.
What do you mean?
He plays bass with his left hand.
Okay.
And that's very much an anchor.
When you say plays bass with his left hand, is it electronic? He's actually playing
keyboard,
something
yes.
that sounds like a bass.
Keyboard bass, right.
Okay. But it sounds like a bass violin, right?
That's, right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And so, Bobby, why is that the place that you refer to? Why is that right? And why
because
is the left
as a
hand?
Jazz singer, if I can't hear a bass note, I can't hear my key signature.
Okay.
And it's the bass note that carries the key signature.
So you're really feeling the key.
Very much so. Jazz
bass,
is very much a felt.
Yeah, two-thirds of the bass is all felt through your diaphragm anyway. So you're vibrating to the stuff
so
he's
to
doing
speak,
with his
yes.
left hand in a little way. Yeah, okay.
But back to what Kari said, and to answer your question, Pat, it's very much transactional. It's conversational. And singers have all manner of methods for letting the band know what's next. Sometimes they use arm movements or the way they stand or hold their body. Sometimes they can level a look that really means business, and you know where you're going next. Yeah.
are you speaking of someone in the studio with that look?
Any number of the jazz divas, actually, they all have their own way of communicating to the band what they want next. So.
How much? Go ahead.
Well, it's possible to respectfully mean business
mm-hmm.
in a very friendly manner.
Yeah.
You know.
How do you go about shifting gears? So you're gonna work with Bobby,
mm-hmm.
and she's gonna do 2-3 numbers, and then somebody else is gonna come up on stage, and they're gonna be one of the people that you selected because they have this different note that you're trying to bring into the performance. So what do you have to do? You have to kind of internally go from first to third, or
well, in preparation for Jazz Divas, I rehearse all the singers for a while, and we develop a set list so that every song and every singer is different from the last, different style, and different key signature.
Deliberately chosen.
Correct.
As a programmatic thing. In other words, you put the program together so that
right.
Bobby's in there at the right point.
Right.
Where you
and
want.
Give a different tempo so
okay.
that the listeners or the audience have something new to enjoy every song. Yeah.
So the people who want to listen to your art and craft need to call up and make a reservation at Zephyr for tomorrow night.
Correct.
And if they want to have dinner before 8 o'clock, it just ain't going to happen. This is what Bobby's telling us here.
I think
okay, unless
true.
You really know the manager well,
that's
it's right. just not going to happen. Okay.
Well,
so,
there might be cancellations. It's always good to call.
Yeah.
And we'll be going late, so I think people should show up whenever they can, and they'll still be able to enjoy the second part of Jazz Divas, if not the first.
Is there a cover?
No cover.
No cover.
No.
Okay. And once again, can you give us that list of names of people that are going to be performing?
Yes. Our MC and host is Eve Dillingham, and then we have Alyssa Fisher. They're all from Juno, all the singers. Beatrice Cogel, Christina Pollock, Bobby Mitchell, Alaska's Kit, Kari Groovin. And then I'm the accompanist, Right. Tom Loker and Clay Good will be on the drums.
Okay. And this starts at 7, but that's for the people who got in there early. And everyone else, it starts at 8, kind of,
well,
as of now. But
people can
check and see if there's
probably
a,
wait in the bar there's a, until there's a table for
there
them.
You go. Yeah. There you go. Well, come on out and listen to the Divas.
That's right.
Let's listen to one right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Piece there by Madeline Perrot, and the Divas are playing tomorrow at Zephyr at beginning 7 o'clock. So take a look at maybe picking up a reservation for dinner and listening to some great jazz music. Updated forecast just came over the line. Tonight we're looking at snow showers with an accumulation of up to 2 more inches. Lows around 24 overnight. East winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, and Saturday mostly cloudy. The snow is likely mainly in the afternoon with another accumulation of around 2 inches. Highs around 30, northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Looks like lovely cross-country skiing weather for the weekend. Saturday, snow likely. 2 to 4 inches more snow over the weekend. Lows around 27, east winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. And then Sunday, snow likely. And they're now saying that that's probably not going to change into rain until around Monday. So the whole weekend ought to be just perfect conditions for skiing out on the back loop and maybe out on the other trails that are around and up at Eagle Crest and all that sort of stuff. My next guest is not interested in snow because he's preparing us for when there is none on the ground. Darren Snyder is here to talk to us about upcoming Master Gardener classes. Hi, Darren.
Hi, Pat.
You're on that. You're not on that microphone. You're on that one.
Well, hi, Pat.
Now,
say
hi, Pat, again.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us, what's coming up?
Well, we've got the Master Gardener class that is a program that is offered through the Extension Service nationwide, and we have a program most years offered here in the Juneau area, and it's coming up on February 7th, and this program is designed so that we can bring gardeners who are already gardeners a few steps further and bring them up to where they can be trained and become educators themselves in the community.
So that's the definition of a master gardener, someone who can actually pass on their knowledge to someone else.
Yeah, that's the overall idea of the program. There are lots of other things we can get into about what master gardeners do, but that's the main goal, is that we're training the master gardeners, and the master gardeners are then going out into the community as volunteers to support community learning.
So this is Southeast Alaska, where it rains all the time.
You noticed, huh?
Well, yeah, I've noticed. So how do you deal with that in a garden?
Well, there are definite strategies that have been found, I'm going to backtrack all the way to your assumption that I'm not into snow. In my other part of my life, I enjoy this solid water, so it's fun. I get up to Eagle Crest whenever I can.
Give them
a little plug. But once this water changes to a liquid, it's something to deal with. If you haven't tried to grow here, then you may not be as aware, but it's challenging. We have cool, wet summers. That's the norm. And we first off choose plants which will thrive in these conditions. And so there are many different plants that will do that. But if we don't find those plants specifically appealing and we want to try others, then we exclude the rain. We do different techniques. Well, you know, the plastic coverings, you'll see these row covers down low. You'll see the large hoop houses or greenhouse type structures. So there are definitely strategies and raising the beds. That's a very common thing in Southeast, and it's necessary so that we can get rid of that water and allow for good drainage.
So is this part of the content of what would happen, what someone would expect if they went to the Master Gardener classes that you have coming up?
Yeah, we have a whole array of different topics, and they're all having to do with becoming a more advanced gardener. And we step through it, starting in basic botany and plant physiology, and onto soils and soil fertility and composting. We look at plant propagation. How do you start plants, whether you're using seeds or vegetable cuttings, and on to more in depth with the physiology. What kind of diseases can we expect? What kind of pests might be going after these? And how do we deal with that? So I've got each class is unique. So this is the third time that I've been leading this class to be offered in the Juneau area, and each year it's been a little bit different. So we're trying out a little bit of something new this year. Whereas last year I had a major online component, because you can take an Alaska Master Gardener class online. If you check out our main website at the uaf.edu/CES, you can find that you could take an online course. But a lot of gardeners want to be hands-on. They want to be face-to-face, and they want to have the camaraderie and just the community building that a class allows for. And so I've gone back to being almost exclusively a face-to-face class, and in fact our group will be meeting together, but we're going to have some outside experts beaming in through video conferencing and a webinar type thing, but we'll have our core class all together when we're experiencing that and benefiting from their expertise. We're also going to definitely stick with the time-true successful method of using our local experts to come in and share about their expertise. You know, some of our first ones stepping in are going to be Sandy and Suzanne Williams sharing about vegetable growing and seed starting. They're definitely some of our longest standing folks in the growing community. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to bring in a number of others. I've had a bunch of folks saying yes, they're interested. Anybody, Chris Myrtle and Ed Byarski and Dave Lendrum and Merrill Jensen, and so a lot of folks are coming in, and if you're out there and you're one of our community experts, then feel free to give me a call at 796-6221, we can see about either getting you on the slate for being an instructor, or if you're interested in taking this class, give us that call, 796-6221, and we'll get you signed up.
The classes, again, start?
February 7th.
Okay, and how long do they run?
The last class will be March 20th.
And okay, it's so gonna basically be on, the month of February and March.
Yeah.
Is that like once a week or
it's
a week?
It's 2 nights a week. It's going to be on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And we're going to skip a few days there in March, late March. But otherwise, it's going to be pretty much just right on through. We're going to have at least one Saturday. I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, March 3rd. And then we're going to reserve, you know, once you get going with a class like this, people are really excited about growing. These are what we're looking for here again is folks who have at least a year experience of gardening here in Southeast Alaska. And so people who know that it's a challenge to grow here, and they may have some ideas on what might work, what might not, and then to build on that knowledge. And so when these people start working together as a group of master gardeners, then they get excited. And so I expect to be doing some additional things, activities on into the spring, especially around like pruning, practicums, and that kind of thing, where we're gonna do that further later on, into April and maybe even May.
So, Darren, what's the charge for the Master Gardener class?
It's $135.
Okay.
And with that, you get the Sustainable Gardening Manual, which is an excellent resource for growing in these conditions.
And 2 months of basically 2 months of evening classes on Tuesday and Thursday nights.
Yeah, it's 40 hours. Is 40 hours
of instruction. Is there does anyone get a degree or anything like that or credits for this course?
We don't have any like continuing ed credits built into it, but you do get a certificate and once you complete, we haven't talked about the
service requirement. Yeah.
Once you complete what it is 40 hours. It's 40 hours for 40 hours. You get 40 hours instruction, and you give back 40 hours to the community. And
in what form?
In various projects. We have some great projects that have been going on. In case you haven't noticed, there are community gardens that are sprouting up in Juneau over the past couple of years, and our master gardeners have been instrumental in doing those projects. When designing and starting projects like that, and then providing the education to teach people once you have something like that, how do you grow? How do you make this stuff work?
Good. If they want to take the course, what do they do next?
Call 796-6221, and we will. And then also, if you get on our extension website, look up the Juneau District Office, and you can actually register online.
Wonderful. Okay, Master Gardener classes coming up in February.
Someone blessed these seeds I sowed. Someone warmed them from below till the rains come tumbling down. Pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my own, 'cause the time is close at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music from the land. Plant your rows straight and long, temper them with prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. An old crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. And in my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief up there.
So Master Gardener classes coming up in February and March. Contact the UAF Extension Service for information on enrolling in the Gardener classes. My next two guests are Christina Rich and Anna Dindinger, and they're here to talk to us about the upcoming Relay for Life kickoff party. What is the Relay for Life, Christina or Anna?
Relay for Life is the American Cancer Society's largest fundraising mechanism, and it's a 24-hour event that we hold here in Juneau each June where we get teams out walking on the track, raising awareness and funds for cancer research and patient care.
Mm-hmm. And when you say walking on the track, so this is not like a race or anything like that?
It is not a race. It's a team event.
Okay, and when you say relay, then, does that mean that I walk for a period of time and then I pass the baton on? Is that it? So it's like a relay race.
Yes, we are recruiting teams actively. We've got about 15 signed up here in Juneau currently. Our goal is to hit, we want 40 this year. And so each team is made up of however many people you want on your team. Usually the goal is to get about 15. That way there's not just one person on the track, but to have the hope is to have somebody on the track for the full 24 hours from each team.
Okay. And the money is raised how?
Each team does various fundraisers,
okay.
Car washes, bake sales. We have donation cans at various businesses that they'll put out to raise funds that way.
Others send out email campaigns to friends and family. They use Facebook and Twitter. Connecting with people across the country who believe in the cause.
Okay. And if someone, all the teams aren't formed yet, right? So someone could still form a team?
Yes.
So how does someone, what do they do if they want, say a business wants to put a team into the Relay for Life?
They can go on to the website and the American Cancer website and the Juneau Relay for Life, and then there's contact information in there of how to get a hold of the committee members to be able to register. Tomorrow we'll be at the Nugget Mall doing a kickoff party from 11 to 4. We'll have information there for the various committees. One of them will be the team registration booth. Some of the teams that are already registered are going to do fundraising there. They've got bake sale tables, door prize table, craft tables. We're also going to do a mini relay there at the mall tomorrow. We're hoping to get people out there to walk. Our goal is to hit 50 miles tomorrow.
Where are you going to walk in the mall?
The perimeter of the mall.
Oh, okay.
They have mall walkers, and they've mapped it out of how many times you have to walk around to get a mile.
How many times do you have to walk around to get a mile?
Four. You have to walk the perimeter of the interior of the mall four times to get a mile.
Four from starting point right around the edges of the mall, and like that is a mile. Okay.
Yeah.
That, you know, that might be a good thing to just know for health purposes.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well. Yeah.
It is. And we've been lucky that the businesses at the Nugget Mall have supported this. They're putting up purple displays in their windows. Their staff are wearing purple ribbons in support as we paint the mall purple essentially tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you come over to the Nugget Mall tomorrow, the interior mall stores and then also the businesses on the outside in the parking lot of the Nugget Mall have also been asked to paint their storefronts purple.
Mm-hmm. Christina, once the Relay for Life has happened and the money has been raised, what happens then? In other words, what happens with this money? Where does it go?
40% of the money raised stays in Alaska, and it is used for anything that cancer patients need. It's not just if you need a plane out of Juneau, if you need assistance in finding a wig after chemotherapy, or if you need somebody to talk to, a family member to travel with you for treatment. The American Cancer Society is there to help. They also have a 24-hour support line. There's always someone to talk with. They support research with that money. Some of the tests that are being used currently today started out with American Cancer Society relay money funding, what was it, 44 Nobel Prize-winning researchers.
And those kinds of research programs are still ongoing?
Yes,
and this
yes.
money would contribute toward that.
Mm-hmm. In 2010, Juno raised about $68,000 was Juno's contribution for 2011. Juno's contribution to the funds raised was $68,000.
How do we stand in relationship to communities our size elsewhere? Do we know?
We're part of the Great West District, and there's 13 states in that, and Juno regularly places in the top three per capita.
How did you become involved in this, Anna?
I have two parents that I have still here today to walk the survivor's lap because they caught their cancer early. Cancer is very personal. I work at Bartlett with the oncologist that comes to town. And I got an invitation one day to a relay. I went out and realized it was exactly what I needed to do to say my thanks that I still have parents.
Tell me about the survivor's lap.
We start relay with the survivors doing the first lap. The 24 hours is sort of a tribute to surviving. It's the different phases of cancer. You start out, the evening gets dark. After you're diagnosed, it's a very dark time. You get treatment, the dawn, everything's raising. There's a lot of programs through it, but we started out with the survivors out on the track, and then we invite the caregivers to join them. I think we had about 20, 30 survivors out on the track with us last year.
Christina, how about your involvement with this?
Cancer has affected our family pretty it just seems pretty regularly between friends and family. My grandpa passed away in July from prostate cancer, so it's made it just that much more important for my family and I to get out there. We had friends that have passed away from ovarian cancer, and the thing I like about Relay for Life is it covers all cancers. It doesn't just focus on one particular cancer. So it's been a personal because of friends and family, but then I also work in the medical field with the Juno Bone and Joint Center, and I've seen patients come in for knee pain and be diagnosed with bone cancer that they thought was just a tear in their knee or ankle or whatnot. So it's just touched it that much more to see somebody getting that initial diagnosis, whether it be family, friends, or just a community member.
Your goal this year is?
We're hoping to raise $75,000 for Juno and to have 40 teams.
So each team would their share would be roughly?
A typical team raises around $1,000.
Okay.
We have some that go significantly above that. We included in that number, we have a lot of businesses that sponsor between $250 and $5,000. And then they're able to. Their business names and logos are put on our T-shirts and flyers, and all of that goes into what we're hoping to present the American Cancer Society with this year.
And the kickoff party again is this weekend?
This Saturday at Nugget Mall from 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock.
Okay.
There will be cake. We're giving away birthday cakes. The part of the logo of American Cancer Society is celebrating more birthdays. So we've got birthday cake. We've got information booths, fundraising booths. A local teen band is going to do an acoustic concert.
No Outlet at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
Okay. Christina Rich, Anna Dindinger, thank you very much for telling us about Relay for Life. If people want to put together a team one more time, the way they do that is?
They can contact me, Christina Rich. My cell phone is 723-9907, or my email is scrapmom1976@yahoo.com.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming down and sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Monday, Jeff will be hosting J. Kevin Birchfield about his new book, Full Moon Over Juneau, the second part of a series of seven specials highlighting the history of Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Will be produced by Nellie Moore. We'll hear that on the show. Pam Halloran from GCI is coming in to highlight their upcoming open house. And Carl Brodersen will be here with a preview of next month's Juneau World Affairs Council's World Quest event. All of that on Juneau Afternoon at 3 o'clock Monday afternoon. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens to us on K201AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9, and in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is on K210AS at 89.9.